the delegation for surgery is led by Mr. Barry Miller. Apologies from the side of the committee for two members who are serving on the information specific bill who are not here with us, who are thinking with that process. And another person, yeah, those are the few apologies. This meeting has been called for a sustaining committee report. In most cases, we receive reports from different departments. I'm sure it's the first time of the meeting that has been called by the next committee. In most cases, we receive reports from different departments, more especially the finance report that will indicate that there are lots of vacancies, particularly at higher levels of different departments. And what we would have loved to know as a committee, how does this vacancy affect the service delivery in these different departments that we deal with as a select committee, which is health, social development, and home affairs. And also, we would like to know as a committee whether, with the update of the people who are supposed to be appointed as this senior position, whether this person is able to carry his mind to the board. And you know that at some point the press at one place is issued sharply of the issue of vacancies, and departments were expected to indicate how long the appointment cycle takes in each of the departments. That's why we thought that it will be important for us to bring to all the departments to be here with us so that we can go through this issue so that we know exactly where are the challenges and how can we assist them as the select committee in addressing the problem of vacancies in the department. So with that, those two remarks, I would like to allow the team from the Auditor General to meet us on the presentation. And I know that the presentation most of you have requested today. There's an apology that they were only able to collect all the documents that were required by this committee on Friday. That's why we have submitted this morning. So please remember that.
Thank you very much indeed for this opportunity to provide some information for the CCC benefit. Honourable members, thank you very much indeed, and good morning to you all. My name is Barry Wheeler. One of the corporate executives in the Office of the Auditor General. I've previously been involved in the audits of hospitals, health at provincial level, at individual hospital level, also social development and also SASA. However, I've not had much to do with home affairs in the past. However, mandate today is basically to provide you as members of the committee with information relating to vacancies in the three social sector departments and to be able to give you some insights into the type of impact that has within these departments. I must firstly, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, just give the Deputy Auditor General's apologies, Mr. Kenny Makwete. He would have liked to have done this presentation himself, but unfortunately that was not possible. Honourable Members, I'd like to start off with the health sector as such, and I've provided an analysis of information. I must firstly point out that this information is not audited information. In other words, this is information which has been extracted from the 2010-11 annual reports of all the provincial departments and the national departments. on their vacancy situation and post filled as of 31 March 2011. We do not have any reliable information whatsoever at this point in time on the current situation, other than in one or two cases where we know there's been turnaround strategies, or cases such as Mpumalanga where there's been a partial lifting of the moratorium in their Department of Health, for instance. So please bear with me when I state that these figures are not audited. Therefore, the absolute reliability and accuracy of this information is not assured by the Auditor General as such. What we have done is we've taken the information, because it's the most common denominator that we have at 31 March 2011, because it's the most consistent that we have. We have taken that data, put it together, and analyzed it for your benefit and for your information. So in other words, this is really an analytical analysis of information that's already public knowledge and which was published in the annual reports of the nine provinces and the national departments. What I really am trying to do is to provide a high-level assessment of the key areas of vacancies within the health sector with these slides, and also that impact on service delivery as such. If we can go to the first slide, maybe I should just deal quickly with the reputation, promise, and mission of the Auditor General. As a Chapter 9 institution, we do believe that we have the constitutional mandate as the Supreme Audit Institution in South Africa, and it exists to strengthen the democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. And we believe it's through these presentations and analysing information the way we do that does provide you with that empowerment to be able to exercise oversight in terms of your responsibilities. We can go to the first slide. What we have here is the total number of posts which were filled, which are shown in green, across the entire country, which amounts to 69%. We have 31%, which accounts for nearly 130,000 positions, which remain vacant as of 31 March. So roughly we have a situation where nearly one-third of the positions within the departments of health countrywide are in fact vacant. So that's a definitive number that we're able to produce as a whole. If we go to the next slide, what we've done is we've taken the vacancies, which is slide 4, per province. And what we've done is we've provided you with a breakdown of what the situation was, taking into account the 2009-10 information which was provided by departments. That's in the second column of each. It's very much lightened. And then the dark, bright color is the 2010-11 situation. Now, from this, we've also given a very quick indicator of where we are at the top by having red arrows going down, which indicate that things have actually deteriorated over those between those two financial years, or green, where we've indicated an upward movement, in other words, an improvement between the one year to the other, or yellow, where it's remained more or less unchanged. That is the situation across the provinces. Obviously, again, green being full posts and red being the vacant positions. If we have a look at the vacancy rates in the Free State, KwaZulu-Natal and Limpopo, we see the improvement which has occurred. However, despite the improvement noted for Limpopo, one will still see that the vacancy rate is still at 45%. So despite the improvement, that still remains an ongoing problem. If we look at the provinces of Gauteng, the Northern Cape, Northwest, and the Western Cape, you'll see that the vacancy rate itself remained more or less constant and stable compared to the prior year. And there's a variance there of less than 3%. The Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, and the National Department, however, experienced a regression with regards to their vacancy rates. The most significant vacancies relate to the following provinces: the Eastern Cape, which is 44%. A moratorium here was placed on the filling of vacancies, therefore regression was experienced during the year. Also, due to the various investigations which have been conducted, several staff members were dismissed, which contributed to the vacancies. Approximately 2,000 staff members were dismissed in the 2010-11 financial year in the Eastern Cape. Mpumalanga, there was a moratorium which was placed on the filling of vacancies in the province, which included the health sector, and the department is unable to fill these vacant posts as a result thereof. I was in Mpumalanga last week on Friday, and the Honourable Premier, Mr. David Mabuza, recognised the issue in the health sector in the province and has indicated that there has been a lifting of the moratorium on the filling of critical posts in the province of Mpumalanga, and that is currently in the process of being addressed. So that's a very updated situation. At national level, we have a vacancy rate there of 33%, and the national department is currently in the process to restructure the department based on a review of the structures which was done by consultants. They have therefore placed the filling of posts of vacancies on hold, pending the finalisation of that process. They did, however, give consideration to critical posts that urgently needed to be filled. So that's the vacancy scenario across the provinces as a whole. If one goes to the vacancies per program, which we've provided in slide number 5, within the health sector, if one looks at Program 1, Administration, one will see a 31% vacancy rate. Now, I must point out that these are programs right across the entire country. It's not individually per province. That information is available in the annual reports. So this is a high-level analysis for your benefit across the country. So Administration, 31%. If one has a look at the one of the critical areas within the South African scenario is the district health services, where we have a 37% vacancy rate. And this includes a lot of the vacant clinics. Sorry, the vacancies occur in the clinics within the rural areas and within districts. And the clinics themselves fall under this specific program within the health sector. Another area of concern is the 28% vacancy rate in Program 4, which was the provincial hospital services. Just some comments relative to this specific slide. We have excluded the National Department of Health here on this specific slide, because the provincial departments have somewhat different programs to the National Department as such, so it would not give us consistency. The purpose of Program 1 is to provide the strategic direction and leadership and to guide and support the development of policy frameworks and guidelines for priority programs. Now, to develop policies and legislation on healthcare provision and to ensure that norms and standards are followed in the course of the implementation thereof, one needs the right type of skills and the right type of capacity there. And I think if the honourable members can just please keep in mind that when we talk about vacancies, there are a number of other issues which go hand in hand with that. It's not just a question of putting a warm body in a seat. It's the marrying and matching the job description and the skills that are needed and the potential that an individual shows with the actual individual themselves. So you could have a warm body there, But if that warm body is not contributing to the objectives of the department, it's a bit pointless having that individual there too. This analysis does not take into account that type of thing. There's also two other critical areas that need to be kept in mind. One is the retention of staff. I do believe very strongly that those departments, municipalities and entities which have a retention strategy as part of the human resource framework tend to actually have better results, and there is a continuity which occurs. And one of those is because people are given challenging tasks where they're up to it, and therefore they find their job a little bit more enriching and enjoyable. The other is they're given exposure to different areas, which is outside maybe their normal work environment. These were people that showed potential, high flyers, people that have an interest in developing themselves, studying further, and are potential leaders going forward for the future. I think leadership programs is another very important thing to subject these types of individuals to as well. And the last item I want to deal with is the entire issue of training. Whether one likes it or not, it plays an important aspect of ensuring that staff remain up to date with what is happening and are given the tools, whether those be electronic, whether those be knowledge base, to be able to perform. And if I can just get one point across today, honourable members, if we can align staff and departments and entities to see the big picture and understand the objectives of what the department is continually trying to drive at, and they translate that into their daily work and see their individual contribution towards the objectives, you'll generally find that your staff will produce. And what we should be aiming for here is for each and every staff member to be producing at a level of excellence. Because unless the organization as a whole is operating at a level of excellence, you are never going to get full service delivery at the end of the day. And if the person who makes the tea or provides us with this water in the morning does not understand the importance of that fairly simple sometimes task and how that actually contributes to walking away here today with a sound and good solution, because we've had what we needed in terms of resources, and one of the resources we'll need today is water during this meeting. So it's a very simple issue, and it's not a difficult issue to convey to people. There's just got to be a clarity in terms of the message, and we need to engage with everyone within the organization to ensure that we achieve that. Moving back to the vacancies, under Program 2, the District Health Services, the purpose of this program, to keep everyone focused on this, is to render the comprehensive primary health care services, and this is the district hospital services, the comprehensive HIV and AIDS care, tuberculosis services, and to deliver priority health programs, including the nutrition program. Looks like Program 3 is not such a serious issue. As a whole, the vacancy rate is not too bad there, but this is the emergency medical services, and this is to ensure rapid and effective emergency care. Program 4, the provincial hospital services, is somewhat of concern here, and the purpose of this program is to provide level 2 hospital services provided by specialists through the regional general hospitals, TV hospitals, psychiatric and mental hospitals, and dental training hospitals and other specialized hospitals. Program 5, the centralized hospital services, the vacancy there is 18%. This program is the highly specialized healthcare, research and specialist referral centers. Program 6 is the health sciences and training. The vacancy rate there is 22%. And this is a strategically positioned program within the department to address the human resources needs within a specific province. So it's a critical environment. And the priority areas here include the alignment of human resource provisions with the services transformation plan. This provincialization of the primary health care and the emergency medical services and revitalization of services. Program 7, which is the healthcare support services, vacancy rate there is 19%. And the purpose of the program is to provide efficient and good quality non-clinical support services to hospitals and clinics. And this will be in the form of research, laundry, food supply chain services, and medical supplies. Program 8 is the health facilities management, and there's a vacancy rate of 16%. And that is to equip hospitals with new facilities and to upgrade, rehabilitate, and maintain clinics, hospitals, etc. Moving to the next slide in the health sector, what we've done here is we've excluded, you'll note, administration program 1 in this analysis of vacancies. We do not believe it's, it directly impacts on the health services directly. And what we've done here is clearly indicated that in analysing just the vacancies themselves, so in other words, we're not looking at full posts here, just the vacancies. If we take that across the country, we're looking there at district health services, which is the first item, program 2, with a total 62%. So of all the vacancies, 62% is in the district health services. And it's quite nice when you get down to pie charts like this, because I think it very visually shows through this analytical process of exactly where the big chunk of the vacancies and facts lies. So 62% of it is in program 2. The other one which is of concern is program 4 here, which is the provincial hospital services, where there's a 24% of those vacancies. So if we take the two combined, the purple and the red, we're looking at a total there of 86% of the vacancies alone on those two programs. What we've also done is taken the vacancies again against the actual posts, and we've done it per program across the board. And in this case, we've broken it down per province because it is extremely revealing. What we have in program 1, and this is why we've excluded program 1 from that prior analysis as well, if one looks at the Eastern Cape, one will find that one has a situation there where the posts are actually overfilled by a total of 74 posts, an 8%. So at the moment, program 1 in the Eastern Cape is 108% full. And that's why that one looks somewhat different graphically than that we've shown it at the bottom, the overfull versus the actual establishment. If one has a look at the other vacancies within the provinces themselves, one will see that the Northern Cape itself is probably the most impacted when it comes to Program 1, and that is the administrative and support services there. If one looks at the provinces which are better catered for, it is predominantly the Western Cape. However, it is still of concern that one is sitting with vacancy levels of this nature within the support and administration program. But I think that paints a very vivid picture of where the focus needs to be province-wide. Honourable Chair, what we've also done is we've looked at the vacancies across the health services sector, and we've actually taken the what we believe are critical occupations across the board in terms of the various delivery areas within health as well, and we've drawn a comparative of what how many posts there are and those that are actually filled. The vacancies are in red. And this paints a very clear picture that the biggest areas of concern is the medical practitioners, which is third from the bottom, and also pharmacists, and also dental practitioners. So again, it's the high-skilled areas where the vacancies are occurring, and if one looks at the professional nurses level, one's looking at 40% there, and also the medical specialists, one's there is looking at 32%. But again, across the country as a whole, that is the reflection of vacancies of the health sector relative to critical position. What we've also done is done a somewhat of an analysis on a couple of the critical occupations and the vacancies per province, and converted them into a line chart, which clearly indicates where the areas of concern are. And if one has a look at the yellow, for instance, which is the Eastern Cape, it is obviously problematic in attracting and retaining certain professional staff there. If one also has a look at the Mpumalanga. Yes. If one has a look at Mpumalanga, which is the sort of light grey area on that chart, with the 61% vacancy rate for the dental practitioners, for instance, one again sees a pattern. Now, this is a Pacific province which does not have a university, for one. It's one of the challenges that Mpumalanga faces as a province in terms of attracting persons with higher qualifications. They tend to leave Mpumalanga, do their training elsewhere, and then return to Mpumalanga. But those are really the two critical areas at this specific point in time, as far as the critical occupations are concerned in provinces. If one looks at other Pacifics, at the emergency care practitioners, obviously the Free State is highlighted there in that sort of orangey umbra color with 21%. Again, if one has a look at the Gauteng environment, again, the emergency care practitioners levels are very high there too. So again, one needs to look at what are the Pacifics which are driving that issue. If one looks at pharmacists, Eastern Cape's obviously a problem, Gauteng remains a problem, and if one looks at the Northern Cape, remains a problem as well. In terms of nursing professionals, I think Mpumalanga and predominantly the Eastern Cape have the greatest difficulty in attracting and retaining nurses. If I may now move to just some of the impacts that this has on the core programs and service delivery as such, I think the retention of key staff and attracting scarce resources remains a challenge, since better employment conditions and benefits exist in the private sector at the moment in terms of health professionals' pay is concerned. I think the shortage of staff results in overworked and often demoralized staff as well. And I do believe that that's an important factor in terms of ensuring that everyone is full of energy and committed in terms of achieving the best that they can possibly achieve, given the resources that are available. Another area of concern is the extent of training. I think it would be fair to say across the health sector, the training is poor. And if one goes and looks at that sort of impact on service delivery, if your staff are not adequately trained and not adequately skilled to deal with situations from either a management perspective, from a emotional intelligence perspective, in terms of softer skills and in terms of high level standards and skills relative to their profession, and the ethics that go hand in hand with that, one cannot expect high-level service delivery. Patient unhappiness and patients not being attended to and poor management of patients due to the shortage of critical skills like doctors and nurses. It's going even further beyond that now. It's now a question of the provision of basic maintenance issues. Food has become a shortage in one or two areas due to crises. Water is another issue. This is the type of thing we've had. The maintenance of electricity supply at hospitals with power outs, etc. The shortage of specialists and other healthcare professionals resulting in patient backlogs, which have occurred. The lack of ambulances and personnel in the emergency medical services has a huge bearing on the compliance to the national norms of response times. The shortage of medical emergency services staff resulted in poor response times, poor discipline, and ill morale of the staff actually employed. The shortages of specialists affect the administration of patients and the lack of appropriate specialized care, which influence the bed utilization rate. Vacancies is causing serious service delivery issues for academic hospitals, as the non-availability of critical staff impacts directly on the quantity and the quality of the training service offered. The implementation of OSD resulted in the overspending of compensation, which is placing a limitation on the filling of vacant positions. And inadequate HR training and budgeting constraints results in a lack of posts for critical skills and bursary recipients. The shortage of the staff and need for training within the supply chain management environment had a negative impact on the achieving of implementation of the supply chain management elements, fleet management, and poor asset management. And for the benefit of the honourable members, over the weekend I went quickly through the provincial reports on those departments of health which did not achieve unqualified audits. In other words, those departments that were qualified. And for a full feedback on that, it is available in the Auditor General's Consolidated General Report on Provincial Outcomes, the details. But in the majority of cases, there are two key issues in health which are of concern. And I know this does not relate directly to the issue of the vacancies, but the vacancies are a contributory factor to this issue. And one is the supply chain management and the inadequacy of skills, ethics as well, which come into the picture there. In other words, adequate vetting of individuals, conflicts of interest, doing business while employed in the States with the department itself, running private business and providing services to the state, involvement of corporations or companies, all of those have conflicts of interest. And the issue of assets management, and if one thinks of KwaZulu-Natal, for instance, which very clearly there was a process in place to address the assets there from the prior year, inadequate work was done because of the inadequate number of people to be able to do the difficult task of actually going around to the hospitals and properly recording the assets. And although they really did try hard to be able to finalize that by the end of the year, it wasn't possible. So asset management again plays a big role here, and again it comes down to the number of staff and the skills which are available. And as a result of those limitations, it actually resulted in the audit reports themselves being qualified, because the actual departments themselves were unable to be able to account for the assets which they said were on their books. When we went to the hospitals, we couldn't find them, or items were found but never placed on the assets register, for instance, and therefore the values were incorrectly stated. The shortage of personnel in the infrastructure units resulted in projects not being finalized on time, poor quality work, and the lack of early detection and unnecessary expenditure in correcting poor workmanship. And probably lastly, in the health sector across the board, newly built facilities were not actually being utilized in time due to the shortage of staff. In other words, facilities would be built, operating theatres, wards, etc., but they remained empty and unused as a result of a lack of staff to be able to deal with those and utilize those facilities to the benefit of the public and citizenry. I think as a whole, Honourable Chair, that's the picture I wanted to paint and share with yourself and the committee relative to the health sector as such. I don't know if you want me to take any questions on health before I go on to the other areas, or...
Thanks a lot, Mr. Wheeler. I think it's quarter to 11 now. I think you should also present, if the committee agrees, present also social development, so that we will ask questions on both the partners after we have presented those two presentations. Then we'll take home affairs when the team from home affairs is here.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. So if we can now go to slide number 3.
I'm going to give you 15 minutes.
15 minutes, I'll do it quickly. But the same principles apply to Honourable Members. We've got a vacancy rate there of 37% across social development sector. Moving to slide number 4. We've given the vacancies here again per province. And if one has a look at the results of those, the predominant areas of concern here is the Northwest province in terms of the filling of positions. And there the vacancy rate is 62%. Mpumalanga, we found that the vacancy rate remained more or less consistent, whilst in the Free States, the KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, and the Northern Cape, the situation actually improved compared to the prior year. Obviously, KwaZulu-Natal here seems to be doing extremely well in terms of the vacancies, with only a 4% vacancy rate. If one looks at the social development sector as a whole, per program, one will see that the biggest concern and area is in the development and research environment, although the numbers are not as great there, but it basically comes down to anything over about a 10% vacancy rate in any department has got to have an impact upon service delivery ultimately. And if one looks at those percentage vacancies and how they are distributed per program, I think it very clearly makes it obvious that it is difficult to undertake and achieve programs and the objectives given these sort of vacancies. If one looks at the vacancy analysis for Program 1, which again is administration, on slide number 6, one will find that your biggest areas of concern there are predominantly the Northwest province. If one looks at the Free State, it is also not looking that good either, and requires attention. I'm not going to go through the details of the program. I think most of the members, Honourable Chair, are familiar with this. Maybe just some comments about each one of the provinces. In the Eastern Cape, the department there placed 307 newly graduated social workers who received bursaries and scholarships to address the social work skill issue. And the department is also subsidizing 311 social worker posts in the non-governmental organizations sector as well. Although this is a national issue, in resolving this matter of the social work posts in the non-governmental environment, this matter is going forward, and the total number of bursary holders is now 1,090, Honourable Chair. And these people will be absorbed, obviously, once they've completed their studies. So there are steps which are taking place. Probably the biggest problem in the Free State is the lack of and shortages in the security personnel environment. In that this results in the information and the assets and the infrastructure and clients are not being adequately protected as such. Gauteng, I don't think that there's much there at this stage that's changed. KwaZulu-Natal, the vacancy rate in the department as at 31 March 2010 was 68.7%. And a massive effort was then actually put in KwaZulu-Natal to address this issue. And they have actually addressed it. And the vacancy rate is no longer as high as what it is elsewhere in the specific environment. If one can then move on to slide number 7. Again, here we've taken the post filled versus the vacancies per critical occupation, and we've grouped them in the specific case, and this gives a very clear picture here in terms of the critical posts of the social work and related professionals, the permanent staff, the 67% vacancy rate that exists there, and then just what we've classified as other critical posts of 45%. So there is a serious issue in terms of the filling of positions. Going to slide number 8. Again here, this is a straight line bar. And again, it highlights, again on the same basis, of the other critical positions and where the vast number of the vacancies actually exist in terms of province, and also the professional social workers on the permanent staff, and where the major concerns lie. Again, one will see Gauteng. There appears to be a certain amount of challenges there. And again, Northwest has got challenges, together with Mpumalanga as well. Maybe just a general comment in terms of the social development sector. We do believe there's sufficient social services professionals available to communities in the provinces, as most of the provinces have a vacancy rate of 10% in the social services programs within the departments. If one goes to the next slide, look at factors which are impacting on the service delivery. We believe one of the problems that exists that needs attention is that departments don't have proper measures in place to monitor NPOs regarding expenditure incurred and progress made on service delivery. And if one goes to the sector section of the general report on the provincial outcomes, we've made specific mention of concerns which we've raised in that regard. Also, departments don't have proper measures in place to monitor the actual service delivery of NPOs regarding care and service to older persons, child care and protection services, as well as have a community base for HIV/AIDS. Also, inadequate office space is a challenge. In this regard, if one has a look at the situation within SASA in terms of records, you'll find that there is a concern regarding the adequacy of proper storage facilities and the ability to be able to quickly and adequately retrieve information which has been put into storage and to update information which is coming in on a daily basis for maintenance purposes of files and records. I do know SASA themselves have tried to address this issue by introducing a system of interns and bringing people on board on a temporary basis to address the immediate problems which it is. There's also financial constraints to implement organisational structures within the social development sector. Chair, I'm comfortable leaving it at that.
Thanks a lot for the presentation. I hope members have been taking notes as the presentation was proceeding. Now, at this stage, I will allow members to make comments and interact with the presentation, ask questions. You can also ask questions because the departments are here. You can also pose questions at the department relating to the issues that have been presented before us. Where do I start? Okay, let me start from that side. Honorable Faba? Honorable Mashamaite, is your hand up? Okay, let me start with Honorable Mashamaite, Flaky, Faba, De Villiers, Mahate, then Honorable in that order.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, and thanks for the presentation. My question is in relation with the health sector. In the presentation, it was indicated that there is a poor training of staff, and which contributed to the trouble here.
Mm. What's happening? Give it to somebody else. Yeah. Those young ones know everything about technology.
I'm sorry. My question is in relation with the training of staff, Honorable Chair, which impact on the service delivery. Can the department share with us why do they allow the staff to be poorly trained? Who is doing this poor training? Because it is completely unacceptable, Chair, to let our staff to be poorly trained. It is completely unacceptable. So can you share with us who is doing this poor training? And I know money is involved here for the training of the staff. Why should we pay people who are training our staff poorly? In other words, you are saying we are allowing to give poor service delivery to our people. That is the interpretation of this poor training. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. In your presentation, you indicated that the information you're giving out here today is not audited. It's analytic information, as you said. So what I want to find out, Chair, what then will be the implication if this information then audited, will there be a variation of facts as presented by you today? That is the first question. And the other one is on the vacancy rate, as indicated per province and national. What I know you have tried to explain reasons that led to the vacancy, but what I want to find out from you, what causes these delays? Because if you look at the explanation you've given per province, some in some areas they overstaff, some, is there no other some kind of, what you call it, a norms and standard nationally that will be able to guide provinces how to go through staffing the office, their offices? That's what I wanted to check with you. And the other one just went out, but it's on health, where it has indicated 268 in Western Cape. I am not sure whether I have just marked it here, Chair. I'll quickly find it.
Okay.
This one, Department of the first one, Department of Health. Where is the slide? Is that one, the small one, at the end there, I marked the page. Yeah, this is slide number 9. Critical occupational services to provinces. You look at there. There is a slight small portion at the end there. 2, 8, 2, 4, 5. But that implication means that the Western Cape is properly run. That's what I wanted to check from you in terms of the information you're given there. Per vacancies in terms of those critical occupational vacancies. Thank you, Chair.
Slide number nine.
Yeah.
Which are the numbers you're referring to, Honourable Member?
The small one at the end of the room is 5, 4, 2, but when I look at the colour, it represents the Western Cape.
Oh, it's just the colour. Yeah. I understand.
You look at that one?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. My one question is also the same than Honourable Plaikie, which is astonishing for me that I look at the vacancies post filled the province where the Western Cape is only 4%, and the closest we've got is the Northwest on 14%. But what really worries me is Mpumalanga on 59%, and my own province, the Northern Cape, on 38%, and Eastern Cape on 44%. Now, if I heard correctly, you said that as soon as you go above 10% on vacancies, it has an impact on service delivery. Now, I mean, you know, if you just take the 4% of the Western Cape out of the equation of this whole summary right in front, we're at 31%. I suppose if you take that out, we're going to sit with almost a 40%, 37 to 40% average of vacancies in the rest of the country, and that is worrying. And that to me is a problem on service delivery that I want to know, do national talk to that, or does each province talk to that? And who takes responsibilities? The MECs on health? Someone should be held accountable. As we're actually sitting here representing our provinces and trying to be apolitical, it is definitely a worrying factor that looking at provinces here, that they are not service delivery in a lot of these provinces because of vacancies not filled. Now I can't let anyone tell me that there's not qualified people to appoint. Because do you want to tell me it's only the Western Cape that there's qualified people to appoint? I can't believe that. Somewhere there's a problem, and I want to know who is going to take accountability for this. Is National taking care of this, talking to the MECs, telling them that they should put it right, and is there an action that National got to try and rectify the problem that we're seeing here? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'm actually a worried person this morning because from your side, Honourable Chairperson, you informed us that the Department of the Auditor General only get this information on Friday the 17th of September. And that is the reason why I'm actually a worried person. If the department can only gather this information at that late stage, during 2012 about information concerning 2010-11. Then the different provinces are in a very bad state because they cannot improve on the problems actually in the different sectors in the province. And that is actually my worry in connection with this information. Now, my question in connection with this is we have information about the vacancy rate in the different provinces. And in most of the provinces, we can see they differ from 44%, 59%, 33%. Now, if the provinces and or the province and the department, together with the minister, do have that information beforehand, then they can actually go and see and study what can they do to address the problems in the province. Now, the information we get this morning is that there's no, or the information from the province side to the Attorney General, can only gather it on Friday. So there's a problem, and then the department from the Attorney General must tell us as committee members, is that so that it is so difficult to get that information from the different departments or the programs or from the minister or the head of department? Is it so difficult? Is there a lack in provinces from the most senior person in the sector of health and also the sector of social development or the sector of home affairs? And what are the problems? Chairperson, if my question is not so clear, then the department will just have to ask me to get more clearer to the question. But actually, why I'm so disturbed is the situation receiving the information. That's the reason why I'm actually wandering and walking this way and that way through the question. Then on the vacancy versus post per program. Actually, we can see here from the information this morning that the health sector do have a problem in service delivery. If you can see the administration, 31% vacancy rate. So if there's a problem in the administration program of the department, usually you can expect that all the other programs there will be some kind of problem. Now can maybe through the Auditor General Department or direct to the Department of Health, what is actually in the program of the department or from the information through the Auditor General to the department, what they can actually do to assist them to address the situation. Did you prior give the information to the department, the head of department, and ask them that they must come forward with some information and a plan to address the problems in the administration, in health services, in the provincial hospital services? And during our oversight visit in, I think it was two or three provinces last year, we did see that there are problems in the situation of hospitals and also clinics, especially in KwaZulu-Natal we were, and the other one was Eastern Cape and Limpopo. But just put that information aside. Those hospitals, actually, we can find, and the clinics we can find in that province. That of those clinics and hospitals, they must be able to provide the community with the service delivery and with the money they get from a national government. So this information here, does it include also that information where you cannot find any clinics or hospitals, or is that information only of those institutions we can find in the province? Then, Honourable Chairperson, going to the social development. The last two slides. The proper measures in place to monitor NPOs and also NPOs regarding care and services to old persons, child care and the protection services, as well as have a community based for HIV and AIDS. And then the inadequate office space, and the last one, the financial constraints. Now, the NPO from the department, they are actually one of those organizations who assist the department in most of the cases, especially when they are on the outreach to communities. And we did get that information from the department last year, that there is a problem in monitoring NPOs. Mm-hmm. Again, my question to you as the AG's office. This information to the social development department or to the head of the department, there must be some information from your side to say to the head of the department that they must address the problem as soon as possible, because this can get into a huge problem for the department and for the head of the department. Now, the inadequate space, office space. The social development officials, Honourable Chairperson, we expect them not to sit in the offices, but actually go out to the community. Now here we hear this morning that there's inadequate office space. Is it in the whole system of the department, or is it only in a certain sector of the department officials we must have an office to work in, because 90% of their work is office space. And then the financial constraints. Are you actually saying this morning to us that the department, maybe in SASA, or the department itself, don't have enough money to run the department? And if so, how can we solve that problem? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation. Chairperson, I think my first question will go to on program 2, which is district health services. I must indicate that one is worried, because the main purpose is for people to get services, but it's a worrying factor if when the program that really deals or which is at the heart of the people is the one that is suffering. Maybe one would, I would like just to check from the social, from health as it is. Don't they have the strategy, retention strategy? Because the challenge is here, you find in rural clinics, rural areas, in a township, where you find buildings with beautiful buildings, but which are not fully equipped, which does not have staff. Do they have retention strategy to attract our young professionals? One is more interested around that. Also, the issue of placement. Placement. Do we have the right people, or are we still having a challenge where people who are not qualified to be in this position, particularly in health, that are the people who are managing your health sector. Maybe that one from the analysis of ages, maybe it will be the right person to respond to that. Is this because we don't have the skills, or this is because of the misplacement of the skills? The other one is around the emergency medical services. One would like to check from the health, whether don't they have, you know, like your guideline. You can't expect the services, people to get services on time. But on the other hand, your systems that you use to respond, it's got its own challenges. For example, if I have to be specific, this thing of the centralized service, particularly in our hospitals, when you phone the emergency services, you'll be in Swaziland, but the call firstly have to be transferred to Freiburg, which is 60 kilos, and then only then the services will be sent to a particular area. How really do you expect people to respond on time if we've got this, I don't know how to call it, but the system itself is very difficult for people to respond on time. The issue of new buildings, I think it will also go to the first point. But what I just want to check is that does one just, or the department just wake up and think that, or maybe because sometimes we've got this challenge that towards the end of the financial year, people will want to spend. They will want to spend. You find a situation that you find a clinic, a hospital, which is built far from the community. And you ask yourself why. Were people under pressure? They didn't do proper research around, you know, where the facility should come. Because in most cases, you find, even if we do our oversight, you find that we've got buildings that they don't even serve people, because people are far from those facilities. I think it's something that really one has, the department will have to clarify us. Chairperson, the last question is around the issue of SASSA. I think when the issue of SASSA is a worrying factor. This thing of SASSA, you know, to get information is a challenge. It's a reality. This is what is happening. This is exactly what is happening. I was worried, or maybe I should just indicate that I'm worried, that every time we'll come up with another new invention, because I'm asking myself, there is this process that people should reapplication. But you ask yourself, how is it going to be possible while we are seated with this problem where SASSA can't even have records or keep records of people, which is a challenge. You come with a new system, but you have not corrected the old system, that people are still having problems. I just want to check, how do you think this one will best address the interests of the people on the ground? Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, I will go to or start with the percentage on provincialization. Knowing exactly that from the office of AG, you may not be equally qualified. I know that there is a problem of implementing provincialization. There has been a moratorium in Gauteng because of labor not agreeing with the government. The issue lying there is that there is staff that is employed by municipalities. You have nurses, you have whoever. Then there is staff that is employed by provincial government. the salaries and the benefits of those that are employed by the municipalities are far surpassing those that are in the provincial government. Hence, this graph. So, I'm aware that you may not have an answer because it's policy thing, but also it's government talking to each other in terms of municipality and local government and provincial government. Number two, so I'm not sure at your level in terms of this information that you, but I think maybe you are empowering us so that when we, the next step, I think it should be calling direct, provinces direct. And then we ask these questions. Okay, then number two, I know in Gauteng we are being held by the Office of Treasury currently on health and on GSSC. And problems of health have been recurring and recurring. You find that on the budget of 2012-13, there are bills of 2010-11, 2011-12, and all those things. So as the money comes, it has to pay those debts that have been piling up. So again, I think it's the Office of Treasury also. In terms of, I know Treasury quarterly calls them, but I don't know how far is that thing. So the other one, it is on Gauteng again, from a Treasury's prerogative. The townships that have been taken from, have been reincorporated into Gauteng. We have hospitals in Hammanskraal. We have hospitals in Garankuwa. We have a hospital in Marafong. However, these locations and hospitals or services have been transferred to Gauteng, but money is still with Northwest. And they are still with Northwest and Mpumalanga in terms of Inkangala. And I know it has been raised repeatedly, but Treasury is not responding to that. Hence, you will find then those vacancies not filled. And the reprioritization then takes in place in terms of where do we cut. This cut on personnel, whereas filling of vacancies was one of the governing party's manifesto in terms of all the vacancies must be filled, but also in terms of matching the money that does not talk to itself to that. The other one is on the scarce and critical scheme. Each department is supposed to have its own strategy in terms of skills development, identifying, I know there has been an HRD strategy, there is a national strategy, NSDS, in terms of the skills. How far is that program meeting our demands? Because for years we say we have critical skills on this and that, and we also say we train our people, and then they go to Britain, they go to where they can be paid better than we pay them in South Africa, whereas we've utilized our monies to do that. So what I want to know is the question of, again, also that the question at age's level, maybe we may not also be able, but departments together with higher education and all the departments that are related in terms of matching the bursaries and the skills development money, the National Skills Fund money, where is it going to? Are we then be able to say we are training this, and then after that, then the demand and supply issue? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Probably a comment or whatever that I would like to make with regard to the Department of Health and vacancies in there. I think my question would be linked to the introduction of NHS, which the Department of Health is busy preparing for. And the Minister was here last week and spoke on the issue or what is required to ensure the success of the national health insurance in the country. Now, my concern is with the vacancy rate, just as the national, which shows 31% vacancy rate, at national level. When I say national, I mean all provincial departments and the National Department of Health. But also when you look at now the provinces, looking at Mpumalanga, for example, the Eastern Cape, the Limpopo provinces, and those provinces are the ones that really need these services as well. And also if you go to the vacancies per program, district health services is actually the most affected year in terms of the vacancies. And this program is actually at the core of health service provision, and even the provincial health hospital services. And of great concern to me as well would be the health sciences and training, because we need to conduct research that will inform policy as well, and to get a bigger picture in terms of what is happening on the ground. And if those are not happening, probably we will have challenges with regard to the NHI as well. So that is probably something that the committee needs to look at as well, as far as oversight is concerned. I just wanted to make that comment there. And then with regard to social development, on slide number 9, I'm not sure if I'm reading that sentence correctly. It says there is sufficient social service professionals available to communities in the provinces, as most of the provinces have a vacancy rate of more than 10% in the social service programs within the department. I don't know, but I think I'm not reading that statement very well. Probably there is insufficient social service professionals. I suppose the social service programs right at the end of the sentence would be social, it's welfare services program. I'm saying that because the vacancy rate as well there is actually high. For example, if you look at slide number 4, you find that in a province like Northwest, there is a vacancy rate of about 62%, I think, if I'm reading this correctly. And can you just explain that statement in slide number 9 in relation to what you have said previously with regard to vacancies? Just for clarity for me. Thank you.
Okay. Those are the questions. Just one question, because most of the things the members have touched on. It's on slide number 7 on Eastern Cape. That's a question that has not been asked. Eastern Cape is overstaffed or is overemploying. How is the situation what kind of assistance have you provided to Eastern Cape or the National Department? Is the National Department aware of the situation in Eastern Cape, that the health department in Eastern Cape is overstaffed, and what kind of assistance has been given in the Eastern Cape by the National Department to try and rescue it from this situation? So then I will allow the AG's office to respond to the questions and the department, those that are relevant to the department.
Thank you. Again, I'm aware that the Office of the Auditor General calls or visit provinces annually and talk to them about the findings. I was one meeting last year in Gauteng. My question would be, you pick up these things, you discuss with provinces, what more should happen if these things that you pick up continually exist? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want maybe to add on the question that you have asked. One, the issue of what are the financial implications for over-employment, particularly in the Eastern Cape.
Okay. Anyone who's ready?
Maybe I can start, Honourable Chair, if I may. And there's been a number of questions, and what I'm going to do is, if you do not mind, I'm going to try and combine one or two and just put a few of the issues into perspective as well, if I may. And please, if I have not specifically answered any member's question that arose in this response, please, if you could just indicate at the end. I think the issue relative to the poor training within the Department of Health is an issue. And I think it has been correctly highlighted already in terms of the impact that lack of having professional staff or adequate numbers to assist with the training and development also impacts. But what we're really dealing with here, when we talk about training is poor, is there is insufficient attention being given to the needs of the department and the gaps between the skills that are available and the actual needs of the department to be able to achieve its objectives as such. So let's just call it a skills gap. Now, before training is actually action and money and resources are spent on that training, you need to have a very clear indication of exactly what the, let's call it, the core skills are that require to be provided to staff, what the soft skills are that require to be provided, and even to some extent the developmental and, let's call it, leadership skills which are required for the leaders and the leadership within the organization as well. That has not been thoroughly assessed. So that is the first part. What I would suggest is required within the health sector is a very clear, let's call it I prefer the word framework, for how training is actually identified up front, what needs to be done to address the skills gap that exists, who needs to be the recipients of that training, and who is to provide the resources. And all the resources do not necessarily have to be provided in-house either. There are adequate reasonably priced processes which can be followed together with universities or together with other service providers at reasonable cost, and sometimes cheaper to do it outsourcing part of it, but then there's got to be proper controls. And the second thing, which is a major factor that is missing, is once the training has been provided, who is assessing the quality of that training that has been provided and the impact that that is having in terms of the objectives of the department ultimately? In other words, there's a lack of processes and systems to adequately monitor the training that is being provided within the sectors at the moment. And that does not only apply just to health, it extends to other sectors within the public service as well. So on the issue of training, the main thing here and the focus is, one, the identification of the need, the skills gap, and then secondly, the training itself, the quality of that training, and the impact that that is having. In other words, has it empowered the staff members to be able to better perform, to be able to be capable of doing more, etc. And that's where it's failing there. So on that basis, we regard it, without an adequate framework to deal with those issues, it remains poor at this stage. Not all of it, obviously. There are areas of excellence which do occur anyway. But if one takes it generally and looks at the training, it is weak. You also find there's two other factors. Often the training tends to be focused on the professional core business within the organization. And then those who support that core business, often they are excluded because it's not core. So you could have administrators here. You could have persons involved in maintenance of equipment, etc., not receiving the adequate training that's needed. On the question of the service delivery and the fact that the information that we're providing here is not necessarily audited, a number of the issues which have emerged here and where the impacts of delivery occur, we've been able to pick some of those up through the auditing of the performance information, which we did in 10-11 during that financial year. Unfortunately, if one looks at the annual report framework which has been provided by the National Treasury together with the Public Service Administration, we undertake the audit of personnel information. In other words, are people employed, are the right documents there, etc. But on the actual figures which are provided, we do not need to perform an audit because the performance information relative to vacancies and full posts, post establishments, lies with the Public Service Administration and the Public Service Commission. And maybe to follow up, Honourable Member, on your question regarding the audited information, what might be useful, if the Chair is in agreement with that, I would strongly suggest that you request the Public Service Administration to actually provide an updated situation, because figures are submitted regularly to PSA on the full posts which are available, and also the posts which are, let's call it the establishment as such, if that might be a better understandable word, the posts which are on the establishment and which have been approved and in fact funded. Because this is another issue, you get funded posts and unfunded posts, which has also got to be clearly understood by members too. But the Public Service Administration should be able to provide you, together with the department, in terms of accurate, up-to-date figures on the current situation. The issue of the information not being ready, I must apologize for that. We were requested approximately a week and a half ago to consider providing a presentation. What we did do is we tried to seek up-to-date information, and obviously that was totally inadequate, inconsistent from our individual provincial offices. We then decided that for consistency purposes and to be able to paint a proper picture, we'd have to use the 31 March 2011 figures, which were readily available and been consistently reported across the board. But we do not audit this information in any depth at all. We purely make sure that the financial information that is provided supports what has been reported here. Probably one of the questions that is often asked is, with these massive vacancy rates, surely we should be seeing approximately a one-third saving across the personnel expenditure across the provinces and departments. And that does not necessarily work like that either. In other words, the funds are actually utilized for other purposes, such as the salary dispensation, catch-up, for instance, et cetera, et cetera. And again, if I can come to, madam, if I could come to your question regarding the catch-up in terms of funds being utilized from one fiscal year to pay the debt of a prior fiscal year. Yes, that does occur. And one of the decisions that we took as the executive within the Office of the Auditor General was that we've added a fourth focus area into the provincial work at the moment, which includes looking at the Provincial Revenue Fund a lot more closely. In the Provincial Revenue Fund accounts, the actual commitments of the province are actually better spelled out than what they are in the actual financial statements of the individual votes and departments. So let's call it the financial stability. Will be looked at a lot more closely going forward as well. I can give an example, for instance. We had a situation in KwaZulu-Natal at the end of the last fiscal year where an amount of nearly 1 billion was actually owed to the provincial pathology laboratories. Of that, approximately half of it was under dispute. But because of the fact that it was under dispute, payment had not been made at year end. And the question then's got to arise in the minds of the auditors is how do we view this? Do we view this as a deliberate retention of funds to make the budget actual versus expenditure look better? But this is the reason why the accounting framework requires all such commitments to be reported at year end in the notes to the financial statement. So as long as there's full disclosure, then we're generally comfortable. But again, it's a question of the proper accounting within the correct financial year, I do believe is important. The other is, as you mentioned, the fiscal dumping. Someone mentioned the fiscal dumping at your end, I think it was you, Matt, where the Honourable Member stated that you often find buildings suddenly erected here towards your end purely to get rid of the funds that were available. And often then you've got quality problems and that go with that. On the point of the vacancy rates and why it takes so long to fill posts, here again, what we've done is every single province, we will visit the head of department regularly, at least quarterly. We will have engagements with the MEC or the minister on a regular basis during the year. That is normally quarterly as well. We will also have discussions, and it's not fully implemented yet, but I know it has been implemented at national level. We will also engage with the chair of the portfolio committee at least twice a year in updating them where they are. Now, what the Auditor General, Ernest Nombembe, introduced 2 years ago was that during the course of a financial year, we will visit the department every quarter and we will do an update in terms of the status of the key internal controls in that department in year. That information is fed back to the head of department, the CFO, and the MEC or Minister concerned of the progress being made or not. And the way we set that out is very simply in a very graphical form, which consists of approximately 12 pages, but comes down to one page when we discuss it at ministerial or MEC level. And that little graphic that we provide gives a very clear indication to the MEC or the minister concerned. And that's what they actually look like in reality. There's two here. And these here deal with the three, if I can just turn around slightly, it's this type of graph here with green, yellow, red. Now, what we have here is three different areas. One is the leadership of the organization. The other is the accounting work and the management within that department. And the third is the governance areas. And we have a whole series of issues that we look at in this 12-page document, which we then summarize into this one pager, of where those controls are. If it is green, it means the control has been designed properly, it has been implemented properly, and it is working. In other words, someone's checking his compliance.
If it's yellow, it means that it's in progress. It's still being developed. It has not been implemented. It is not working. And then red is where we request the direct intervention of the MEC or the minister concerned. So even at a political level, there is a full understanding of what the problems are, and we also guide, because we cannot do it from the Auditor General's perspective, we can guide in terms of what needs to be done to address those issues. So that is what happens on a quarterly basis, every department, every public entity, national or provincial. So as you've indicated, Honourable Member, that process takes place. What I have been doing with my committees, and I know social development, we've already been through that process already, is actually share this information with the chairs of the committees as well, of the portfolio committee in Parliament. So yes, there is a process. One of the key issues within the health sector is the fact that the HR structures within departments have not got a proper framework in terms of which they are working. So the problem lies in that you've not got the right people, often, the right numbers at certain provinces, to be able to ensure that you're in fact employing the right people, okay, within the health sector in certain of the provinces. So again, it comes down to having a proper, let's call it a framework might be the best word, in place to ensure that as soon as a vacancy becomes known, it is immediately conveyed to HR. And there should be a time period, and exceptions should be dealt with. There should be a fixed period in terms of which the, let's call it, the job description is clear, with whoever the direct line employee is going to be. The advertising needs to be determined within a fixed period. How long should it take from the time that the candidates submit their CVs to the time when the shortlisting takes place and then when the actual interviews take place? This can vary depending on region, it can depend on the capacity that's available, etc. So I believe this is the type of thing that can be built into performance measures for staff in the HR division, so that you cannot manage what you can't see and what you can't report on. So once you've got a very clear indication of how long it is taking to fill certain vacancies, you can then deal with it and where the problems are. But you can't paint the whole sector black because you happen to have a few problem areas at certain hospitals. You need to go to those specific provinces or specific hospitals where the problem is, and then you can take your paintbrush out and say, right, this is the problem area here. But there are areas and cells of excellence within health as well. And those should be used as examples where they have got it right. And they should open themselves up to visitations. My hospital's having difficulty in dealing with these issues. So identify where the excellence is within the health sector, and then utilize those processes and methods that they use to overcome these problems as an example to the others, and also to encourage others to move towards. I think that's important. I just want to link this with the question that was raised by someone regarding the excellence of institutions. One of the things that we find with the auditing process is that where you've actually established a institution where there is excellence and where you retain people because of that, it becomes very quickly known amongst young people that it is a centre of excellence and they want to work there and they want to get that experience for that sole reason. So they are quite comfortable to come along and work at a specific institution because they know they're going to get challenges there, they know they're working with the best people, and it is good experience. It's good to have on their CVs as well. So you attract staff in that situation. We do not have that type of situation with an institution, you are not going to attract staff easily. It's very clear, often in a lot of reports, that where you find centers of excellence, it attracts staff, and good staff, and people who want to stay, and people who want to make a difference. So that is a factor one's got to consider as well. In terms of the accountability for vacancies, it's very clear. There's a political accountability in terms of the minister's MECs, and the accounting officer of the department is responsible for the filling of vacancies. It's not something you can turn around and say, look, it's an HR problem. Now, to be quite honest with you, you'll find that in the majority of cases that you can take just about any department and you require personnel because of vacancies. The head of that department, what do they do? It's their responsibility. Why do you find the sudden transfer of the responsibility to the HR division? No, HR didn't tell us in time. HR didn't come back to us in time. I think it must be very clear within the public service that you are given the responsibility to head up a division or a section or an entire department sometimes. And as the head, you've got to take full responsibility for everything. And that includes the filling of vacancies and bringing in the right people. It cannot just be something left to HR. There's got to be interaction, yes, and consultation, but you've got to take responsibility as head to make sure it happens. The HR facilitate it and provide the necessary structures. The information on vacancies, I think I've dealt with, maybe PSA can provide that or the department. This, honourable members, is only those positions which are on the establishment of the provincial department. So if there are clinics and hospitals which are missing, no, it would not be on. The NPO's issues, the overview by social development, we in fact had a section in our general report last year dealing specifically with this issue and the concerns that were raised regarding the control over the NPO's. I'd just like to identify it here, social development. But the audit conclusion, let me start with the service delivery objective. The service delivery objective was that provincial departments provide social welfare services directly to communities or through subsidizing NPOs to deliver services on their behalf. A total of $4.3 billion was transferred to NPOs by provincial departments. Total transfers to NPOs represented 54% of the total budgeted expenditure for provincial social development departments. The audit conclusion in this regard, provincial departments do not have proper measures in place to monitor NPOs with regard to expenditure incurred and progress made on service delivery. And that was on page 110 of the consolidated report. This is another area, another service delivery objective relating to NPOs, and this deals with the management of transfers. To determine whether the departments monitored the actual delivery of NPOs against the social welfare objectives for the home and community-based care for HIV and AIDS, child care protection services, and the care and service to older person programs as per planned indicators, measures, targets. And our findings in this regard were that the provincial departments do not have proper measures in place to monitor the actual service delivery of NPOs regarding the care and services to older persons, child care and protection services, as well as home and community-based care for HIV and AIDS. That sufficient appropriate audit evidence could not be provided for audit purposes in most of the provinces affected. Now, this deals specifically here with questions that we actually raised regarding the accuracy and validity and completeness of information being kept by the provinces themselves. So I fully support your views. There needs to be a better process of monitoring of the NPOs within the provinces themselves. In terms of office space, it's specific areas, honourable member. The office space issue comes up predominantly with SASA and the SASA regions, where you've got continual updating of files and new additional persons who receive grants, and there's limited filing space specifically. The other issue is the when we spoke about the lack of funds, that was relative to the organizational structures which are being proposed. The honourable members might be well aware of the fact that SASA has had to relook at its structure as an entity in terms of the provision of services, and the initial structure involved a number of individuals. In fact, SASA, as of last year, wasn't even half at its full establishment. And the issue here is the question of financial funding. Definitely plays a role in terms of the organizational structure. There are certain needs within SASA which cannot be met at the moment as a result of that construct. On the matter of the placements, have we got the right people or not? Honourable Member, I think it's a mixture. I think we've got some excellent people. I think we've got the type of people we need for future leadership. I think we need to prepare those people for the position. However, again, it's this issue of small centres of excellence. What we need to do is to actually expand that and ensure that the entire health sector and also the social services structures also really move towards what I spoke about earlier, and that was this the need to strive for excellence in everything we do. I don't think it's a question of misplacement, because we find within the professions themselves, the professional individuals, there tends to be a choice of wanting to be in a specific environment. I'm not aware of any guidelines for the EMS, emergency services. It's not something I'm aware of. There might be something out there, but to be quite honest, I'm not aware of it. In terms of the provincialization, Gauteng, I think, was used as the example there. I think I've touched on this matter somewhat in terms of the debt at year end and also the fiscal dumping issue. And also the shared services is fairly unique to Gauteng itself. I understand there is support by the provincial treasury in trying to clear arrear payments, etc., and that is the provincial treasury. But that involves a reallocation of funds within the provincial budgeting structure itself. The issue of unfunded mandates, which is what we were talking about really, about the hospitals which have been transferred from the former township areas into the counting environment, I truly believe that's something we can't resolve here, Honourable Chair. That's a political issue that I think needs to be taken forward. Scarce and critical skills. Again, here, there was a truism just now. In dealing with this issue, it is very much the responsibility of the provincial department to ensure that it has a strategy for skills development. And the question of how far this program is, I do not know. I think that's something the department would need to provide feedback on, and possibly on a provincial basis and also from a national perspective. But there is a responsibility at national level in terms of the degree of coordination of specific skills which are required for core business. The 10% I mentioned in social development, the question was raised, the sentence was not understood. We actually indicated that within the actual social services programs within departments, the vacancy rate is basically more than 10% in most cases. And you recall earlier I indicated if it's more than 10%, then it can have a direct impact on the service delivery of departments. With the social services, what we're trying to state here is that we were generally comfortable during the time of the audit that there was sufficient social services professional available to the communities. And that includes through the NGOs and the NPOs to be able to provide a service in most of the provinces as such. But what we were pointing out here was more the fact that the vacancy rate is greater than 10%. So that is the reality regarding the statement that was being made. On the issue of the 108% in the Eastern Cape, I can't comment on that. The status figures that were provided to us. It's only on Program 1. You must just understand that. But that graphic relates to Program 1. And I have spoken to the interactions with the provinces and the MECs. I'd be shocked if there was an MEC or a minister from any province who would inform me that they do not know where the problems are relative to the audit aspects. In other words, what is needed to achieve a clean audit within the departments. And often these issues are linked, because if you've got good financial administration, you tend to have a good result in terms of service delivery. There's a direct correlation. And maybe on that note, I should close, Honourable Chair. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks, Chair, for the opportunity. And also to the AG, I think it's a good audit analysis for us as well. As you know that I'll touch on the HR strategy that was launched by the minister, the sector strategy. And Dr. Strachan is our champion on that, and she can talk to some of those aspects. And some of the aspects that were raised in the questions was the issue of the training, the accountability, the retention, the strategy as a principle, as well as the skills development aspects that have governed that. But before I give a chance to look at that, I just want to give also some context in terms of the financial and our benchmark exercises that we've been doing. And as the agent rightfully said, that these vacancies don't necessarily equate into a saving on budget. And to just give you a quick idea is that we've analyzed some of the growth in heads. And for the last 3 years, there was a growth of about 45,000 in terms of headcount. And that growth is not necessarily towards professionals, but it's skewed sometimes towards the support as well as to the administration functions. And what this has meant is that effectively our personnel changes to baseline means that we've moved funds away from aspects like goods and services, for instance, to fund those warm bodies and those existing staff, which means that there's very little in the budget left than to also finance vacancies as it stands. The other issue that we've picked up quite a bit is also the maintenance of our system, the personal system, because you've got quite a number of positions that show posts to be filled, but they've been on the system for 3-4 years, but they've not been cleared by provinces to say the position is not necessary anymore. And that obviously creates, when you do the comparisons or the analysis against positions filled against what should be filled, then you get a very high vacancy rate. And that means that sometimes your numbers could either be over or understated in terms of vacancy rate. So I think that's something that we have to take back as a sector and encourage our provinces to also clear up so we get a proper and accurate figure in terms of vacancy. But just to make those comments in terms of the financial impacts and what it means, Chair, if you allow, I'll ask Dr. Strachan just to touch on the HR sector strategy in terms of what some of the issues that were raised.
Okay, great. Thanks, Edna. Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Very briefly, I think just to add one contextual factor, and then I'll come just to briefly mention on the HR, Human Resources for Health strategy that the Minister and the DG have launched in October and been very much part of implementing at this current point. I think what we noticed with in the data review we did on the Human Resource strategy was, although there is considerable problem with what we've seen presented as a picture today, and it does present a lot of questions. We found that it isn't a reliable source of information. It's a departure point, but it's not sufficient information. Additional Treasury information does show us that there actually has been a considerable growth in budget and in numbers in recent time as well. The health professionals from 2004 to 2010, for example, went up from 153,383,000 to 210,511,000. So in the last 5 years, there's been a considerable growth in numbers. Obviously, we need to look closely at that in relation to these reported vacancies and what are the actual critical skills. You need that much more refined, granular information. With this town, we've also seen a considerable growth in budget. In that same period, well, 2006-07 to 2010-11, a growth of 27% in budget. So you've seen from 28.7 billion to 58.9 billion. So there's a considerable growth in expenditure also in this town. So I think it all needs quite close looking at in order to really address what is really hampering service delivery here and what are the critical skills. And I think that brings us on to the strategy exercise that the Minister and the DG were engaged in last year. And we did do quite a detailed analysis of the problem statement, and all the issues have arisen in the discussion and the presentation today. I think just to highlight what the strategic objectives that came out of that, which do address some of the problems, although they aren't solved, I think there's an awareness by the Minister and the DG of the problems. The first was to highlight the problem of leadership and management, which the Auditor General has highlighted. In the strategy document, an Institute for Leadership and Management is proposed, and I think that's due to be announced in the very near future. The Minister and the DG are working on that issue. But essentially it's to develop a framework, a competence framework for management and leadership for all levels, formal training and for in-service development. I think the issue is acutely recognised by the department and again I think usefully highlighted by the Auditor General because that reinforces the problem that we've identified. The second area which has been identified is a very real need for accurate information, and the Auditor General highlighted now that actually when you go back to the provinces, you don't get the information you want. That is a problem, and we found that problem. And what we have proposed is a central electronic database, which is also in the strategy document as strategic objective two, to try and have a much more up-to-date feel with comparative data between provinces and also real data. A lot of the shortage projections, which one does see from provincial plans, are done on population ratio numbers, so it's numbered beds per population, and really you need to get much more refined than that to be able to plan properly and provide plans that Treasury will be willing to fund. I think I want to highlight at this point that shortage, that vacancy shortage that we're seeing, would cost $40 billion to fill those vacancies. Now I think we clearly know that actually we can't go and request from the Treasury at the moment $40 billion, even in a five-year plan, to fill vacancies. So clearly we need another plan, which is a much more refined plan from provinces, highlighting what are the critical skills and what is really needed given new policies to develop a service delivery platform which can deliver in a quality way. And it is quite a complex issue in healthcare because it also takes us into the area of skills development and training of different categories of workers. For example, if you're wanting 30,000 more doctors and you can't have them, you maybe need to have clinical associates and you maybe need to have nurses with other skills. And we've highlighted that in the strategy, which is strategy priority four, which is revitalising education and training and really focusing in detail. There's 100 professions. We've viewed all of the professions and we created a skills gap for the 100 professions amounting to a shortage of 80,000 people, which is in the document. And I think that, so we have begun to address your concerns. I don't think they're solved as we sit here today, but the skills gap and the need for different types of professionals to meet a budget constraint and a service delivery need is under consideration by the department at this point. Maybe just to close on a couple of other ministerial initiatives, the review of the CEOs of hospitals, which was done last year, the review of the competence of CEOs was undertaken by the minister. As a result of that, regulations were brought out on the competencies of CEOs and the minimum requirements, and I think that CEOs are about to be reappointed as part of that process, and then we are offering management training within the year for that. And obviously the hospitals cover a very important sector. I think lastly, the point you make on HR, I think that we did highlight that as well, the need to strengthen the HR function and for it to be taken on by heads of department and not left simply to the human resource without that backing. And I think lastly, the one last point is the emphasis on access to rural and remote areas. One honourable member mentioned that strategic priority 8, and we only have 8, there was a very significant stakeholder contribution on the need to address the rural urban inequalities of access to healthcare, and we've proposed to do that through rural campuses and links to training institutions. So we have a lot of proposals on the ground. I think we're aware of the problems there. We do need the detailed feedback from provinces, and I think this provides an opportunity for us to actually ensure we get that feedback in the short term. I'm not sure what the deadline for that is, but where we actually have a practical plan going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm not sure what social development is there. Any Deputy Minister, yes? Any comments?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I've got officials with me here. They will take different questions, but before that, let me just ask the officials from health maybe to look at to slide number 10, look at the issue of the retention of skills due to favorable conditions in public sector. I think here we need a policy to say how do we retain the professionals that are leaving us for greener pastures. Maybe we should also look at that. And the shortage of staff results in overworked and demoralized staff together with poor training of staff. I think that goes together. We should also look at, remember that our nurses' colleges were closed where our nurses were trained and they were given theory and practicals. But now our nurses are from universities. They have theory, they don't have practicals. So those are some of the issues that are giving us a challenge and also causing a patient backlog. I think those are the issues that we must look at when we do our audits, Auditor General. But then I want to go back to social development. I won't answer the questions because we have got people from SASA here, we've got people from the NPOs. I think I'll start by giving Mr. Neshipale to answer some of the questions on NPOs and then go back to SASA. Who else is answering? The two of them, yes. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, the Deputy Minister, and members. We acknowledge the presentation. My answer will be based on just providing some information on the issues of vacancies. I'll start with the broad issues. I think health has such phases in terms of the issue of the structures and filling of posts. I think some of the things that we need to look at these issues that have been raised is an ongoing issue that year in and out, I think within each term of office of the political office, there's always being restructuring in terms of whether the capacity that you have is providing services the way you want to provide it. And I think that's why sometimes you still find some of the vacant posts not filled over a period of time, because it might be there's restructuring in other areas, these issues that need to be looked at, especially the areas that need to be developed. Some of the vacancy posts, if you look at the professional, for example, in the social workers posts, issues are the issue of the supply and demand. In other areas, you find that there are vacant posts, but there's no warm bodies to fill those posts in other areas. The other ones is the issue where, if you look at the social development point of view, you look at the program 2, which has got only 35% vacancy rate. And I think some of the questions is the issue where there's not enough personnel to fill those vacant posts. In relation to areas, if you look at the areas where there's major impact, some of the things from National World could report, the reorganizations and the restructuring of provinces also have a very major impact. One of the examples is the Northwest assistance. You saw the 60%. There's a lot of restructuring. One of the things you need to consider, health and the social development in the Northwest was mixed. It was matched. Later on, it was then splitted. So which means you have to reorganize and organize, and that has an impact in terms of filling the post. As you know, filling the post in terms of our own laws is not something you can do within 3 months. And even the structure, you can't develop a structure within 3 months. So I think the year under review has got a major impact. I think we will work with the Auditor General to also look at from 2010-11, what is the impact of the vacancies, or what are the level of the vacancies in all 9 provinces, because the situation might have changed. One of the other areas that we acknowledge and are aware of the issue of the NPOs in relation to the monitoring. The department developed that. I think we were aware in the year under review 9 and 10, policy on financial awards in the social development was developed with guidelines. And in 2010-11, it was approved. And what it calls is the approach in which those NPOs need to be monitored. But it's not necessarily the post itself. It is that there should be warm bodies at all 3 levels, spheres of government. Local level, province, district, and at the provincial level. The structure that we have doesn't talk to that. So therefore, that will remain a problem until we change the structure to say, for NPOs monitoring, this is a tool, but it needs the manpower to implement that. That at a district level, we should have people that works with NPOs, that ensures that on a monthly basis, there's a reconciliation of their budgets, services are monitored and reporting. But there's no warm bodies because the structure is still historical. It's pre-2009 and 10. So you will always find that. But I think we are working with provinces to deal with issues that relate to alignment of the structure with the service configuration. There is, you will also realize in the national department there is a new model which is child and welfare. It's been the model approach that we are implementing. That is not catered for in the structure which is there. So you can keep on going and filling the post while you are restructuring and reorganizing your service configuration. So I think those are some of the matters we need to be configured. Really, yes, we also agree that there are areas where we need to jack up in terms of filling the post. If you look at the slide 5 on the social development vacancy on the program 3, which is development research, there's a lot we need in terms of restructuring, in terms of community development, the community development practitioners, which in terms of the present structuring is not catered for. There's not a number. So you can't go on and fill the historical posts that are vacant, where you are reconfiguring to say, the approach which you need to take is a bottom-up. We need to have more people on the ground to be able to look at, to be able to serve our citizens better. And with that, it also affects how you fill the post to address your reconfiguration of service delivery. And I think those are some of the issues that we will work with the Auditor General to look at that. Indeed, it won't translate into money, savings, because you realize that when a structure is approved, it is not that immediately within 12 months you will be able to fill all the posts. You find that you've got available resources to fill at least 60% of what you have, and the other ones will be accumulated structuring. One of the examples, I will mention the issue within the social development under Program 3. Treasury, we requested money for filling of the posts. We were given money in the MTF 3-year period. So you all can only fill, out of 30 posts that need to be filled, you can only fill 7 in the first year, and then you will do 7 next year, and 7, it becomes 27 in 3 years' time. But when you look at a point in time, it will look as if there's so vacant posts that are vacant. Whereas I think the approach is that you look at the reconfiguration of services and look at the MTF period. But as time goes on, I think we will work with them in terms of how the configured approach, the provinces that are reorganizing themselves, the posts that need to be filled, and we can present that, I think, to say up to which level have we, our vacancy rate will be in line with our reconfiguration. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Chairperson, Committee, and Deputy Minister. I think the fact of the first of all, only 50% of staffing is actually funded within SASA. SASA is not currently carrying its full mandate. Its full mandate has to be that it has to pay out the pensions as well, because we still have a contractor. With regard to issues of space, previously provinces signed 9 contracts with how to store their files. We have more than 20 million files. If an application form was 20 pages long, today I can tell you it's 5.5 pages. You can imagine the bulk that we have. There has been no staff establishment approved for the registries within SASA. To further add to complications with health, welfare, and then SASA, literally sharing all spaces. So there's been a contest of spaces as we become SASA's own footprint to actually have its own accommodation. I think we are addressing these matters now. There is a staff establishment on the registries, particularly with loose correspondence and missing files. Every nook and cranny has been used in these buildings to store files. It's unsustainable. We have to look at an automated, and hence our re-registration processes. This is all our steps towards automation, so that we can store better. Biometric data will be stored at CETA. We've already procured space. It's not the same kind of space, because you'll just have ordinary little files, which is just the size of your hand, technically. So I think we are working on it. It is a process. I understand the difficulty people not understanding. It's not a reapplication process. It is a life verification process, and we will also deal with how registries need to be automated in the future and not these huge buildings with staff that we don't have at this time. Staff should actually be serving the people. But I'm sure we'll have an opportunity next week to further give the committee the processes involved.
Maybe, Chairperson, she should lay the fears from people that people will lose their money during the process of re-registering. Just explain it.
Okay. As I said before, re-registration is not re-application. We are just going through everyone on the database. In the first phase, which is right now until the end of May, we will take their cards, the All Pay Impulweni card, and give them an interim card. From June till December, we will biometrically verify them for their smart card. That means they can go anywhere in the country to draw their pension, but they will come in April to the places they went to in March to collect their pensions. We are not at this point doing reapplications, and I think that's people's fear. We are verifying, are you the person, because there's a lot of fraud in the system that way. The banks, we have no contact with people who receive their money in the banks. We transfer the money electronically into these accounts. We've had dormant accounts with hundreds of millions of government's money, which we're struggling to fight back. We have to stop that process. So voice activation technology will be used for the banking customers. We will have an extensive education process within communities. We have the process of this here. If my minister and deputy minister feel at the end of December that they'd like to extend this time, they will, in fact, instruct me to do so. But we have to start saving government the necessary money that it has and serve our customers with better quality. We will go to those who are in hospitals and ill. We will go to their homes to do their re-registration. We will also ask them, do they want the same procurator they have today? Because they have procurators who aren't giving them all their money. They complain to us on a wide range of levels. We'll also take their cell phone numbers, because this is how we want to be able to engage with our customers, in fact, who have cell phones. So I think this is steps in the right direction of the future, where we'll go to look at a wide range of options when SASA starts delivering the pensions themselves within 5 years, Chair.
Thanks very much. I think that was the last response on the issues raised by the committee members. I think committee members at this stage, we've got only 45 minutes or 35 minutes left for the Home Affairs to make to receive the presentation for Home Affairs. But I would like to say before the social development and health leaves that this exercise has empowered us as a select committee to probe further on some of the issues that always appear on the AG's report and in most cases are presented together with the annual general reports of different departments. And we are unable as a committee to pay attention to some of these issues, such as this one that we're debating today. That's why we thought that it's very important and necessary for us as a committee to pay special attention on the issue of the vacancies that are appearing or occurring in the different departments. So this information has definitely assisted us. Those issues that have not been responded to or because of the time, we'll definitely communicate with the department, different departments, to see whether we can get that information through a written form. So at this stage, let me allow Mr. Quila and release the Deputy Minister and her team and also the Health Department, the leader of the team, and also your team. Thanks very much. It was a pleasure having you today. Yes. You've got 10 minutes, Mr. Wheeler.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, likewise, this information is based on what was provided in the annual report of the department at 31 March 2011. Just as somewhat of an overview, we must keep in mind that over the past 2 year period, there has been a turnaround strategy within the Department of Health. Department of Home Affairs, I beg your pardon. And the idea here is to try and improve the service delivery, which has in fact taken place, as well as the audit outcomes that go hand in hand with that. And this has been driven by the executive leadership and the governance structures within the department itself. The department has had identified the reduction of vacancies as a key initiative to address these objectives, and in so doing the department has successfully reduced the vacancy rate from 17.5% in 2009-10 to 7.4% in 2010-11. The reduction has seen the filling of vacancies on all levels within the department, and critical to this initiative was the creation in 2010-11 of 417 critical posts and the filling of 42% of these posts in the Pacific year. The reduction of the vacancy rate has seen an improvement in service delivery, and the department achieved strategic objectives as was reported in the 2010-11 annual report. Where challenges existed, the annual report of the department makes reference to the nature of these challenges, which are not as a result of vacancies. The majority of these challenges relate to the lack of proper systems for the measuring and monitoring of the achievements. From the audit process 2010-11, we have seen a decline in the vacancy rate, a strong drive in the executive and leadership towards an improvement in service delivery, and delivery on the strategic objectives. It has been encouraging to note that with the decrease in the vacancy levels across the programs, the internal control environment has improved, and this has resulted in an unqualified audit opinion. Just dealing with the details of the program, if one has a look at the graphics which are provided on screen, one will see that the marked improvement that I mentioned between 2009-10 and 10-11. The program with the greatest vacancy rate at the end of March 2011 was in fact the administration in terms of percentage. I think we can move to the next slide. We've broken down the vacancies by program, a slightly different format than the previous slides. Here we've shown the various programs at the bottom and the actual posts which have been filled been in red, and the actual total number of posts in blue. And one can see there is very little variance there compared to what we've seen previously with the other two departments within the sector. Going on to slide number 6, there's the vacancy rates per band, salary band. We've been able to give a bit more detail here because we're dealing with a single department, and one again can see that the predominant area of lack of movement, or let's put it this way, the greater number of the vacancies happen to be at the senior management level, with 39.1% of the actual vacancies. Just in a different format in terms of the skills. Going over to slide 8. Here we wanted just to highlight the critical occupation areas. Please, I'll just explain this 2009. You'll see computer system designers and analysts. There was 100% vacancy rate. Okay? In 2010-11, you'll see it's zero. That's because those positions were done away with. Mm-hmm. There were two positions. Okay. In the previous 2009-10 period, you'll see they were shown as actually filled. Here again, if one has a look at the information technology-related area, that is the critical area which was vacant at March 2011. And again, this is an important aspect for the department in terms of the security around systems and the extent of the informatics which is actually held, and the security over that type of information is critically important. On moving to the same information on slide 10, which is shown graphically, and that's the end of the presentation, Honourable Chair. I'd just like to mention one or two things. In terms of the immigration services, a significant decrease from 21.3% in 2009-10 to 7.3% in 10-11 that occurred, and the impact of the decrease in vacancies could not be linked to service delivery. In some instances, largely due to the lack of an adequate system to measure the achievement of the targets. There's still some issues around the performance information within the Department of Home Affairs that still needs to be addressed. And I think it's very similar to the issue we were discussing earlier with health and social development. Social development, I must be quite honest, runs a very good system of performance information and monitoring and review in year. It's one of the big pluses that social development as a department have been driving. There's still some work to be done on home affairs at a specific point in time on performance information. But otherwise, this is one department where we've seen a significant commitment, specifically by the leadership, to move in the right direction. And I think this is evidence of it, Honourable Members. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Miller. Let me check with the members. Any questions and comments? Yes. Honourable Mahati, Honourable Plaiki, Honourable Mashamaid. Okay.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I just want to welcome the presentation. And sometimes it's very important to put across the messages on how people feel on the ground, because you are in touch with the people. I must say, sometimes, like, this thing, it feels like a joke. People were very worried, you know, when Honorable Minister of Home Affairs was put as a candidate. You know, the concern was, what is going to happen to Home Affairs? We still need here. You know, it says that leadership that people appreciate, and they see the difference in her leadership style. It's very important that we put across these messages that it shouldn't be like people don't see what is happening. The people really, when they see progress, they'll appreciate. And I don't know how do we deal with this, because my experience, I'm from the Northwest. The challenge is around these people are coming to South Africa illegally. So I know that the measures to control, but if you take like Lesotho, Botswana, there are so many. If people can even not using the border post, they've got just there's instances where you find it's just a fence, people can just cross over. One is interested, how do you deal with that? Because really we've got a lot, and you know these people, they tend to be exploited, you know, for labor, for cheap labor, because they come to South Africa without necessary documents and all that. And that the most people who are, you go to Blackstock, you know, you find most of the people who are working there are from the sort, and they're being exploited because they don't have necessary documents. Even if they've got concerns, they are afraid that I came to South Africa illegally. I think I just want to raise it that how do we deal with those areas which don't really have control, because this is how they get access into South Africa.
Chair, I must say I've gone through these slides earlier before, and I've realized that yes, it's true that there is not just improvement in Department of Home Affairs, but the will to make a lot of changes. So I just advise just to appreciate the manner in which they have now rebuilt the department, because initially it was the department that was regarded as a risky and risking security in the country and all those things. When they started moving towards digitalizing information, I was skeptical, but now I realize that they are in the right direction. I appreciate that even the SASA is moving towards
the same system. It's the safest, it improves services, it improves no quality of the work that they do. We appreciate that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Chairperson, just to emphasize the appreciation for the improvement of the Department of Home Affairs, we appreciate that. And we are saying she does some good work, give our people services. Just yesterday, while I was at home yesterday in Mukopani, I think that the rest of the day yesterday, the offices were not operating of Home Affairs. The reason given was that it seemed that they didn't pay rent because there was no electricity. And people come from far, take transport and so forth, and they don't get services when they are there. It's just that slight problem. I don't know whether they sorted it out yesterday. Okay. I have seen it. Thanks, Chairperson. But keep up the good work.
Chair, could you repeat the officer's name?
Which
one? Yeah, thanks very much. I think the next time the minister comes and will respond to Honorable Makhate's concerns and the community's concerns about whether the minister, if she's appointed as a chairperson of the AU, whether she will vacate her post here in the country. I don't really think so. But she will have to respond to that. Yeah, she must also explain to the public, yes, they need that explanation and response. And also, I know that this department, Tulia just reminded me that it used to be called Department of Horror Affairs. But it has changed dramatically to be the best department that we can be proud of in the country. So I hope all other departments will learn from these good lessons that you implementing in the department. And if there are any responses you want to make, you can. So that, we'll see. I know that the department still has to come back next week to come in. We will review that and see whether there's really a need for some of the departments to come back next week.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to look at that as a committee.
Mm-hmm.
Any do you want to say anything?
Yeah. Maybe just to appreciate the application. That is really a career, and I think we will pass over the meeting for everybody in the expectation to know that the good work that is done is being appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate them. Therefore, we need to do more things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Sorry, Chairperson. Perhaps just to also comment on the first point around the Northwest and the ports of entry and how we will be dealing with all the illegal entries into the country. What the committee is not seeing here is our projections in terms of positions that we had earmarked as priority for this financial year for 2011-12. Mm-hmm. Of the 118 positions, quite a big number of those were actually provisioned specifically for ports of entry. And of course we are in the process of piloting a project where we've recapacitated, if one wants to call it that, the O.R. Tambo port of entry. And of course we understood the risk that would be associated with that, but it's our understanding that the project is also doing fairly well. And then the idea is that once we have ascertained that all Tamba is doing sufficiently well, we would like to see that possibly rolling out further into the country. So we are definitely focusing or placing a lot more emphasis on immigration for this financial year and particularly into the next financial year. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member of the Committee. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just wanted to add to the issue of the management of immigration. That it's white to acknowledge that as the department we've got a role to play in the ports of entries. But I just wanted to, as the Honorable Member has raised it, that sometimes the holes are not necessarily in the port of entry, they're in the borderline.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why then it is not an initiative that can be achieved by Home Affairs alone.
Mm-hmm.
It is a joint venture by all the GCPS departments.
Mm-hmm.
So the matter is being attended to the GCPS cluster departments. And secondly, just to inform the Honorable Members that, for instance, currently there's a cluster meeting where the Minister and Deputy Minister are attending,
mm-hmm.
which is discussing the border management agency.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the concept of a border management agency, it comes because you seek to want to improve the manner in which the entire border
mm-hmm.
is being managed, not only a port of entry, because we can have a very effective system in a port of entry. But if your border lines are leaking,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't serve any purpose. But it's just to say that there are initiatives that are in place, because there is acknowledgement, you know, at a cabinet level, that something needs to be done effectively to be able to have a better management of immigration.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Members. In addition to the filling of posts as well as the BMA collaboration, I also want to add that the decision has been taken by our minister to move all the refugee reception centers
mm-hmm.
that we have
yeah.
to the borderline.
Mm-hmm.
Again, as another initiative to indicate our seriousness in dealing with the issue of the illegal immigrants
mm-hmm.
and to indicate as well that we have acknowledged internally that it is indeed together we can do more.
Mm-hmm.
Because in collaboration with the other JCPS cluster sister departments, we can be able to manage the borderline much more importantly. And we're also moving from the immigration perspective to pre-screening and pre-entry assessments
mm-hmm.
where we want to ensure that before people actually come into the country, they are screened in terms of purpose, why are they coming into the country, so that at that point we can be able to deal with those people who are undesirable coming
mm-hmm.
into the country as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
So indeed, there is concerted efforts to dealing with the issue. Thanks.
Honorable Members and the Department of Home Affairs and AG, I think we have come to the end of the meeting today. But like I have said, that if there are any issues that will need a follow-up by the department to come and make a presentation before this committee, we will definitely communicate it with the Office of the Minister and the Deputy Minister. You'll hear from us. Thanks a lot, Mr. Wheeler, for your presentation and so ensuring that you are here in this meeting. It has really helped us as a committee. If there's anything, we will definitely communicate it with you.